cases on our 9 o'clock docket. There is a panel change between the second and third case, so we will take a little break at that point to change our panel. The first case is Dallas Area Rapid Transit versus Agent Systems. The clerk will announce counsel.
May I please the court? Mr. Harold McKeever will argue for appellant. Mr. Timothy Herman will argue for appellee.
All right, Mr. McKeever.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Harold McKeever, representing Dallas Area Rapid Transit, known as DART. We are here on an interlocutory appeal of the trial court's denial of DART's plea to the jurisdiction in its entirety based on governmental immunity. The general law is that governmental entities such as DART are entitled to immunity from lawsuits unless there is a statutory or constitutional provision that provides a clear and unambiguous waiver of that immunity. A plaintiff in a lawsuit is required to plead a waiver of the immunity. There are three issues in this lawsuit. First of all, the plaintiff's agent system has included in its claims, which is really a breach of contract case, an assertion for relief under the Declaratory Judgment Act. The Texas Supreme Court, as well as lower courts, have all consistently held that if a party cannot circumvent governmental immunity from suit by characterizing a suit for money damages, such as a contract dispute, as a declaratory judgment action. That's exactly what Agent has done in this case, and the trial court therefore erred in not, at the very least, granting part of the plea to the jurisdiction and dismissing the claims for declaratory relief in the lawsuit. The second issue in this case is plaintiff's claims for tort relief. There is only one statute I know of that has provided a waiver of immunity for tort claims against governmental entities, and that's the Texas Tort Claims Act. And they've done it in two circumstances. One, operation or use of a motor vehicle, and number two, condition or use of tangible property. Neither of those circumstances exist in this case. Agent has not and cannot assert that any of the tort causes of action, such as breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing, arise from those limited waiver of immunity items or factual circumstances. And additionally, Agent has asserted claims that are intentional acts or discretionary acts, both of which are specifically excluded from the waiver of immunities under the Texas Tort Claims Act, as well as punitive damages, which is also specifically excluded from the waiver, and all those claims should be dismissed. So the trial court again erred in not granting at least a partial a part of the plea to the jurisdiction and dismissing those tort claims.
Mr. McKeever, is it DART's position that really the only jurisdiction the trial court has would be to have a review under substantial evidence rules of the proceedings that happened in the administrative arena?
If that would be DART's position, that if there is any review allowed at all, it would be limited to a judicial review under the substantial evidence rule. We've cited a case to that effect. We also assert that underlying administrative decision is res judicata, because that was a tribunal with an administrative law judge. There were depositions. There was a full hearing.
Res judicata sounds like summary judgment.
We filed a summary judgment
that
was denied. You are correct, I believe, Judge.
Okay, so when we're here, not on summary judgment issues.
Exactly.
Strictly here on jurisdictional issues.
Yes.
So res judicata doesn't have anything to do with this issue. So let me ask you a question.
Okay.
On page 5 of your brief, you say, the fact that this case was heard and determined by an administrative law judge cannot be cured by appellee amending its petition.
Okay.
Okay, what does that have to do with the plea to the why we're here today?
Well, if the contract, as I remember it, and the Fort Worth Transportation Authority's procurement regulations, as I remember, stop at a motion for reconsideration after the decision by the administrative law judge, and that's it.
You're suggesting that you can cause a contractor to contract away his right for judicial review?
I believe we can, yes. What the one statute that agent has cited, that subchapter 271, which allows for claims on government contracts, has a provision, 271.154, that says the administrative review requirements contained in a contract are enforceable. And it's our position that because of that provision, because we had that in this contract, that's it.
Even though your contract also says the failure to file a motion for reconsideration shall not be an impediment to either appellant or respondent seeking judicial review.
Well, if that is the case, I don't, it seems like it says judicial review under the contract, but the contract does not provide a judicial review. And if that is the case, then the judicial review would be limited to substantial evidence based on the record of the administrative hearing.
Right.
The third claim made by agent, which is really the thrust of their claim, is the breach of contract. And as of the hearing that we had on the plea to the jurisdiction, agent had not pled any statute or constitutional provision that constituted a waiver of immunity for breach of contract. And as we all know, recently the Supreme Court has made rulings on the language sue and be sued contained in many statutory provisions that govern governmental entities, such as Chapter 452 of the Texas Transportation Code, which governs DART and the Fort Worth T. The agent has argued in its brief that the sue and be sued language is a waiver of immunity to suit on a breach of contract. Well, that is just not the law. If it ever was, it no longer is the law. There has to be something else. So what agent did was, after the hearing on the plea to the jurisdiction, filed an amended petition that asserted that subchapter 271 was a waiver, but they did not amend to assert a claim under 271, and in their brief on page 9 have said, we aren't asserting a claim under subchapter 271, we are asserting common law breach of contract claims. Well, the Texas Supreme Court says that common law breach of contract claims, there is no waiver of immunity to suit. You have to sue under section 271 or subchapter 271. They have refused to do that, and they've had months and months and months to amend their petition. They have not done so.
But isn't any breach of contract claim under the common law? I mean, I don't. In other words, 271 is not a cause of action in and of itself, is it? Isn't it just the procedure under which you try to waive immunity?
I believe it is, in addition to a procedure, it is a method of bringing suit, but it has a lot of limitations, such as what recovery can be allowed, no attorney's fees, no exemplary damages, no waiver of tort immunity. There are a lot of limitations. So if someone wants to bring a claim asserting that as a reason for waiver of immunity, they've got to assert it falls under this statute, and here are the damages we're entitled to recover. That the common law breach of contract, there just simply is no waiver of immunity to suit. I think what the trial court should have done was looked at this and said, well, agent, if you are bringing a claim under subchapter 271, then you need to amend, take out your common law breach of contract allegations and bring it under subchapter 271. Trial court did not do that, and agent still has not made those pleadings. And as the pleadings stood at the time of the plea to the jurisdiction hearing, and as they stand today, those allegations have not been made. So the trial court erred in not granting DART's plea to the jurisdiction on the breach of contract claims as well. Wherefore, Dart requests that the trial court's denial of its plea to the jurisdiction be reversed in whole or in part, and that all claims against it be dismissed with prejudice for lack of jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McKeever. Mr. Herman.
Yes, ma'am. May it please the court. My name is Tim Herman, and I represent Agent Systems, Inc. Let me just address in summary form the issues with respect to jurisdiction, which is the only narrow issue, I believe, before the court today. Clearly, the trial court is correct. If nothing else, Section 271.151 of the Local Government Code and the other provisions in that subchapter vest in the trial court jurisdiction over a contract claim that meets the requirements or provisions of that particular subchapter. And those criteria are, was the contract for the provision of goods or services? Clearly, there's no dispute, this was. And it was executed prior to 2005 or whenever the enactment was. It was executed long before 2005. We've been trying since the year 2001 to try to resolve this issue, but that's another story. What Mr. McKeever says is that the remedies that are provided by 271, and they're really not provided by 271. 271 acts as a limitation upon the remedies that you would are entitled to in a standard breach of contract case. What 271 does is, as it says specifically, that the effect of it is to waive sovereign immunity for the purpose of adjudicating a claim for breach of the contract, subject to the terms and conditions of this chapter. What could be clearer? It simply waives immunity unambiguously and directly. So if the contract here, which it undisputedly does, meets the criteria of the subchapter, that's really the end of the jurisdictional inquiry. Now,
to breach a contract.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Opposed to your tort claim.
You're right, Judge McCoy. And our position on, and I think it's supported by Federal Sign and other cases, which hold that the consequences of a governmental unit entering into a contract with a citizen are that the governmental unit's liability is the same as any other person entering into that contract. Now, this contract is for the provision of goods and services in excess of $500. It clearly falls within the ambit of the UCC, which imposes the obligation of good faith and fair dealing upon the contracting parties. Now, Federal Sign says that the governmental unit has the same liability as a private citizen as a result of entering into this contract. Well, one of those liabilities that a private citizen has as a result of entering into the contract and as a result of their performance under the contract is the obligation to deal in good faith and fairly. There's also an implied obligation of cooperation. Now, in this case, this contractor, who of course is now bankrupt, entered into a contract for $10 million, basically, with these two Metropolitan Transit authorities. This is in 2000, in the early part of 2000. The facts are clear, and they're obviously a tortured history. But in 2001, the authorities gave them notice to stop work and to submit a claim under the termination for convenience provision. Okay, that's 2001. Claim submitted, no answer for 2 years, just about. So we pursue them in Tarrant County as the venue, mandatory venue provisions of this contract provide. Then they issue a termination based upon alleged default, and that's in December of 2003. Now, that's 5 years ago. And the only reason I'm going through this history is that that conduct, that performance of this contract is fraught with or loaded up with the breach of their duty of good faith and fair dealing and their duty to cooperate. Now, are we entitled to exemplary damages? I don't think so. The other issue that Mr. McKeever has asserted is that the race judicata claim, you would have to have trial court jurisdiction to file and prosecute such a claim, which DART has done. They filed a motion for summary judgment on that race judicata claim, which was denied. Actually, all of the claims that are contained in their plea to the jurisdiction were already disposed of in the motion for summary judgment, but in the court's eminent wisdom, denied my motion to dismiss. So, based upon the fact that all of these claims had already been litigated in the motion for summary judgment, the sovereign immunity, etc. But what Mr. McKeever has not outlined to the court are the provisions of the agreement itself, which was prepared entirely by DART or the T, I guess. They're both defendants in the underlying case, but where the T is, I don't know. They certainly haven't even objected to jurisdiction under the same contract. But in any event, the contract provisions specify venue in the District Court of Tarrant County for any proceeding to interpret, enforce, or recover damages due to the breach of the contract. The contract provides specifically that the ADR provisions, the alternative dispute resolutions, resolution procedures at the need to be exhausted before you file suit, but that all of those rights and obligations to pursue ADR below are specifically in addition to and not a limitation of any duties, obligations, rights, and remedies otherwise imposed or available by law.
Have you put those in your brief as to where they are?
I've attached an appendix to my brief, but, Your Honor, those provisions are in Section 13 of the General Terms and Conditions of the Contract. I think I attached the pertinent provisions to my brief. I can't recall what...
Okay, but I'm saying, did you reference in your brief those sections you were just discussing? Or?
Yes, I did.
Okay, maybe I missed it. Certainly possible. Well, anyway, it's in your brief. I'm with you. Okay.
And I might add also the subchapter 271 simply states that alternative dispute resolutions that are contained in the contract are enforceable, which we have done before bringing a suit. So, 271 is a showstopper when it comes to jurisdiction. The issue, let me just address briefly Mr. McKeever's assertion that the declaratory judgment claims are a ruse to avoid the attorney fees issue that where 38.001 of the CPRC doesn't apply to the municipality. This contract contains provisions for termination for convenience, termination for default. the damages recoverable under the contract are within the termination for convenience section. Now, the T and DART have taken the position in the ADR proceeding that it was a termination for convenience, but that's an issue that the rights and remedies, the construction of that contract, is squarely within the Declaratory Judgment Act and squarely within the province of the trial court to interpret it. Just as importantly, Your Honors, the sue and be sued provision in section 452.054 of the Transportation Code says explicitly that DART and the T may sue and be sued. Now, up until this Supreme Court abandoned the 30-year history of or precedent of Missouri Pacific, that was a clear legislative waiver of immunity to suit. Now, after Took v. Mejia, which is cited by Mr. McKeever and I think mentioned in my brief, that's not a dead solid waiver anymore. But it also is not an abandonment in toto of the sue and be sued rationale. What the court in Took said is that it might be and it might not be a waiver of immunity. It depends on the context of the legislative enactment. And in this case, you've got the legislature talking about DART and the T, and they say an authority may sue and be sued. And that's not where it ends, though. It says an authority may not be required to give security for costs in a suit brought or prosecuted by the authority and may not be required to give a supersedious or cost bond in an appeal of a judgment. Now, if the legislature had not intended for this to be a waiver of immunity to suit, surely they would not have included supersedious bond language in the provision. Because as a matter of, you know, pure Hornbook definition, there would be no supersedious bond unless there was a money judgment rendered against the authority by a court of competent jurisdiction. So the court, both in Took and in the I think it's MEB Engineering, which is also cited by Mr. McKeever, said, well, in MEB Engineering, they in a per curiam, they sent it back to the trial court. They said, well, the legislature's obviously waived immunity to suit under subchapter 271, and the contractor should have the opportunity to argue in the trial court that immunity has been waived by the enabling statute or the organic statute which created the agency. So I know I'm stepping on my time pretty close anyway, but in any event, there is jurisdiction in the trial court, which is the only question before this court, I would respectfully suggest. The remedies that are contained have no impact on, or the remedies available have no impact on jurisdiction. The provision of the enabling statute, the sue and be sued provision, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. It's ambiguous, and that by definition creates an issue for the trial court to determine. And thirdly, the contract itself provides not only the ADR provisions but all of the relief which would be otherwise available to a contracting party. So you've got liability as a matter of law by entering the contract, and you've got a waiver of immunity from suit on any one of three bases. So for that reason, we suggest and submit that the trial court was correct in its order.
Can you clarify one thing for me? In the ADR procedure, was the only thing that was tried there, though, breach of contract, or were any of these other ancillary causes of action also tried in the dispute resolution process?
All of the issues were before the court, including attorney's fees. Not the court, but before the executive committee, including attorney's fees.
Okay.
Including breach of good faith and fair dealing?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Herman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. McKeever.
Thank you. Just have a few comments. First of all, I agree with Mr. Herman that the pleadings were identical. What agent did in the administrative process was attach the petition they had filed in the Tarrant County District Court to the administrative pleading that they made, so that issues were identical in that hearing as they're trying to assert now. Mr. Herman mentioned something about the UCC and claiming that the UCC applies and somehow allows an action for breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing. We have two comments. First of all, there are no pleadings that assert that the UCC applies or that there are any claims being brought under that statute. Second of all, the UCC does not support an independent cause of action for breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing, and we have cited a Texas Supreme Court case for that proposition in our reply brief. A second comment I have is Mr. Herman talked about the tortured history and how everything got to be where it was so long afterwards. What he failed to mention was that this Farebox system that his client sold to Dart and the T did not work. This was not the only litigation that Agent System was in over their Farebox system. They were in litigation with Capital Metro in Austin, and a transit authority back east sued Agent to try to get their money back for selling them a poor, non-functioning Farebox system. That's how we got to where we are now. Now, I did not hear Mr. Herman state that Agent is not seeking money damages, and that is the test. If they are seeking money damages in this case, which I believe they have admitted in their briefing, and Mr. Herman, without saying so, has admitted up here today, then the declaratory judgment action cannot go forward. There is no waiver of immunity for the declaratory judgment action. And I guess what I'm hearing Mr. Herman say is that Section 271, because it has a provision in there as to making it retroactive to contracts before 2005, that somehow, despite the provision in 271.154, it talks about enforcing administrative processes, allows Agent two bites at the apple. We don't think that's appropriate. We believe that there is no jurisdiction in the trial court for the reasons we have stated, and we request the trial court's denial of our plea to the jurisdiction be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Herman. Thank you, Mr. McKeever. We appreciate your arguments today, and Mr. Anderson as well. Your case is now submitted, and you are excused.
Thank you.